The United States Steel Hour presents the Theater Guild on the air. And tonight, United States Steel and the Theater Guild are honored to present Catherine Cornell, starring in her first radio play, George Bernard Shaw's Candida. Helping to build a better America through better steels and products of steel is the job of the industrial family that serves the nation, United States Steel. Look for our trademark, USS, on any steel product. It's your guide to quality steels. And now, as the lights go down at the Belasco Theater in New York, here, speaking for the Theater Guild, one of America's foremost theatrical producers, is Roger Pryor with a word about our play and players.
Tonight, it's our privilege to bring you the first radio performance by one of the greatest stars of the modern theater, Miss Catherine Cornell. You'll hear her in the first American radio production of George Bernard Shaw's most successful comedy, Candida. As you know, Catherine Cornell's acting is one of the glories of our stage. But Miss Cornell has only appeared in the theater. She's always declined offers to star in motion pictures or on the radio. Tonight you'll hear her in one of the roles for which she is most famous, George Bernard Shaw's enchanting heroine, Candida, whose choice between two men is the occasion for some of Shaw's most amusing insights on the dilemmas of love and marriage. We raise the curtain now on Candida, adapted for radio by Arthur Arendt and directed by Homer Fickett. The year is 1890. The scene, the parsonage of St. Dominic's, not far from London. Its handsome and popular minister, the Reverend James Morrell, is just now seated at the desk in his study, preparing next week's sermon. Over in a corner, busy at her typewriter, is his doting secretary, Miss Posse Garnett. The door opens and Lexi Mill, the curate, enters.
Good morning.
Lexi, you'll have to do all the work this morning, making the rounds and so forth.
My wife's coming back.
I'm to meet her at the train.
Coming back already?
Just for a day or two.
But, my dear Morrell, if what the children had was scarlet fever, do you think it wise for her to leave them?
Scarlet fever? Rubbish. German measles. I brought it into the house myself from the Pycroft Street School. Lexi, catch the measles if you can. Candida will nurse you. And what a piece of luck that will be for you, eh?
Sometimes it's so hard to understand you about Mrs. Morrell.
Ah, my boy, get married. Get married to a good woman, and then you'll understand. That is a foretaste of what will be best in the kingdom of heaven we are trying to establish on earth. Well, you'll have to excuse me now, my boy.
No! Oh, wait a bit. I forgot something.
Yes?
I just passed your father-in-law in the park. He's coming round to see you.
Burgess? Really? Are you sure, Lexi?
Yes, sir.
But he hasn't called here for years. Time to take another look at Candida before she grows out of his knowledge. Well, let me know when he comes, Prossy.
Yes, Mr. Morrell.
Oh, what a good man. What a thorough, loving soul, Mr. Morrell is.
Oh, a man ought to be able to be fond of his wife without making a fool of himself about her.
Why, Miss Prossy.
Candida here, Candida there, and Candida everywhere. It's enough to drive anyone out of their senses to hear a perfectly commonplace woman raved about in that absurd manner, merely because she's got good hair and a tolerable figure.
I think her extremely beautiful, Miss Garnett. Extremely beautiful.
Stop looking at that picture of her on his desk.
Oh, her eyes, how fine they are.
Her eyes are not a bit better than mine, now. And you know very well you think me dowdy enough.
Heaven forbid that I should think of any of God's creatures in such a way.
Thank you. That's very nice and comforting.
I had no idea you had any feeling against Mrs. Morrell.
I have no feeling against her. She's very nice, very good-hearted, and I'm very fond of her. And can appreciate her real qualities far better than any man can. Come in.
Good morning.
Oh, Mr. Burgess, won't you come in?
Thank you. They told me I'd find my son-in-law in here.
Yes, he's in the drawing room. By the way, this is Miss Garnett, Mr. Morell's typist.
How do you do?
You don't seem the same young lady as used to typewrite for him.
No.
No. She was younger.
Percy, I can't seem to find my reply to that letter.
Oh, good morning, Burgess.
Good morning, James.
And Lexi's still here?
I was just leaving, sir. Good day.
Now, Percy, about that reply...
It's on the small table just to the right of the inkstand in the library. You left it there last night.
So I did. Will you take it out and post it, please?
Yes, Mr. Morell.
Well, Burgess, to what do I owe the honor of this visit?
James, 3 years ago, the last time I was in this house, you done me a hill turn.
I did.
You done me out of a contract. And when I give you harsh words in my natural disappointment, you turn my daughter against me. Well, I've come to act the part of a Christian. Shake hands, James. I forgive you.
What? Confound your impudence.
Is that becoming language for a clergyman, James? And you so particular, too?
No, sir, it's not becoming language for a clergyman. I used the wrong word. I should have said, damn your impudence.
James.
That's what St. Paul or any honest priest would have said. Do you think I've forgotten that tender of yours for the contract to supply clothing to the workhouse?
I acted in the interest of the taxpayers, James. It was the lowest tender. You can't deny that.
Yes, the lowest, because you paid starvation wages to the women who made the clothing. My parishioners.
Easy, James, easy. Don't get into a flutter about nothing. I've owned I was wrong.
Have you? I didn't hear it.
Of course I did. I'll own it now.
Well, the question is, have you raised the wages?
Yes.
What?
I've turned a model employer. I don't employ no women now. All the work's done by machinery.
Oh, I see. Well, Burgess, what is your business with me this morning?
James, I give you my word, I come here in pure friendliness, not wishing to be on bad terms with my own daughter's husband. Now, come, James, be a Christian and shake hands.
Burgess, when last you were here, 3 years ago, you called me a young fool.
No, I didn't, James.
Yes, you did. And I thought you an old scoundrel.
No, you didn't.
But that did not prevent our getting on very well together. God made you what I call a scoundrel, and he made me what you call a fool. It was not for me to quarrel with his handiwork any more in the one case than in the other. So long as you come here honestly, as a self-respecting, thorough, convinced scoundrel, justifying his scoundrelism and proud of it, you are welcome.
You will have your little joke, James. Our quarrel's made up now, isn't it? Isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, James.
Candida, when did... Dearest, I intended to meet you at the tram.
Did you, dear? Good morning, Father.
How are you, Candy?
But how did you manage about the luggage? How...
There, I wasn't alone. Eugene came down yesterday and we traveled up together.
Eugene.
Yes, go out there and help him or he'll pay for the cab. And I don't want that.
Oh, very well, my darling. I'll be back in a moment.
Well, Papa.
Candy, who's this Eugene that's come with you?
Eugene's one of James's discoveries. He found him sleeping on the embankment last June. Haven't you noticed our new Madonna over the mantle? Eugene gave us that.
God, you don't mean to tell me your own father that cab touts are such like off the embankment buys high church pictures like that?
Eugene isn't a cab tout, Papa.
Well, then what is he? Nobleman, I suppose.
Yes, his uncle's a peer. A real live earl.
No.
He's a dear boy, and we're very fond of him. He's rather strange and shy. Oh, but then he's a poet.
Yeah. Well, be sure you introduce me, Candy. I can only stay about 2 minutes.
Very well, Papa. You shall meet him and go whenever you like.
Thanks, Candy. Oh, it'll be something to talk about at the pub, all right. Meeting a real live earl's nephew. It will indeed.
Well, Eugene, what do you think of my father?
Why, I hardly had a chance to know him before he left. He seems to be a very nice old gentleman.
You know you're a very nice boy, Eugene, with all your shyness. If you laughed at my father, I shouldn't have minded. But I like you ever so much better for being nice to him.
Ought I to have laughed? I'm so ill at ease with strangers, and I never can see a joke. I'm very sorry.
Come, you great baby, you. You're worse than usual this morning. Why were you so melancholy coming along in the cab?
Well, I was wondering how much I ought to give the cabman. But it turned out all right. He beamed all over and touched his hat when Morell gave him 2 shillings. I was on the point of offering him 10.
No. James, dear.
So this is where you are, my dear.
Eugene is going to give the cabman 10 shillings.
What?
10 shillings for a 3-minute drive. Oh, dear.
But I'm not...
Oh, never mind her, Marchbanks. The overpaying instinct is a generous one. Better than the underpaying instinct, and not so common.
No, cowardice, incompetence. Mrs. Morell's quite right.
Of course she is. And now I'm going to leave you to James for the present. I suppose you're too much of a poet to know the state a woman finds her house in when she's been away for 3 weeks. Give me my handbag, please.
Oh.
Thank you. Now my rug.
Here you are.
Now hang my cloak over my arm. Now give me my hat and this hand. Now open the door for me. Thank you.
You'll stay to lunch, Marchbanks, of course.
No. I should like to, indeed, but I really mustn't.
Why not?
Well, the truth is, Mrs. Morell told me not to. She said I'd understand, but I don't.
Oh, I see. Eugene, in a happy marriage like ours, there is something very sacred in the return of the wife to her home.
There is?
Well, Candida thought that I would rather not have you here, but she was wrong. I'm very fond of you, my boy, and I should like you to see for yourself what a happy thing it is to be married as I am.
Happy? Your marriage? You think that? You believe that?
I know it, my lad. Now, why don't you go for a walk in the park?
Oh, no, no, I can't. I can't.
What is it, my boy?
Morell, I must speak to you. There is something that must be settled between us.
Now,
before I leave this room.
Very well. Now, sit down, Eugene, and tell me what it is.
And don't look at me in that self-complacent way. You think yourself stronger than I am, Morell, but I shall stagger you if you have a heart in your breast.
Stagger me, my boy. Out with it.
First? I love your wife.
Why, my dear boy, of course you do. Everybody loves her. They can't help it. I like it. But I say, Eugene, do you think yours is a case to be talked about? You're under 20. She's over 30. Doesn't it look rather too like a case of calf love?
You dare say that of her? You think that way of the love she inspires? It is an insult to her.
To her? Eugene, take care. I have been patient. But there are some things I won't allow.
Oh, let us put aside all that cant. It horrifies me when I think of the doses of it she's had to endure in all the weary years during which you have selfishly and blindly sacrificed her to minister to your self-sufficiency.
What?
You, who have not one thought, one sense in common with her.
Marchbanks. Some devil is putting these words into your mouth. It is easy, terribly easy, to shake a man's faith in himself. Take care of what you're doing. Take care.
I know. I'm doing it on purpose. I told you I should stagger you.
Eugene, listen to me. Someday, I hope and trust, you will be a happy man like me.
Huh?
You will be married. You will be one of the makers of the kingdom of heaven on earth. And who knows? You may be a pioneer and master builder, where I am only a humble journeyman. For don't think, my boy, that I cannot see in you, young as you are, promise of higher powers than I can ever pretend to. I well know that it is in the poet that the holy spirit of man, the God within him, is most godlike. It should make you tremble to think of that.
It does not make me tremble. It is the want of it in others that makes me tremble. Tell me, is it like this for her here always? A woman with a great soul, craving for reality, truth, freedom, and being fed on metaphors, sermons, and rhetoric. Do you think a woman's soul can live on your talent for preaching?
Marchbanks, you make it hard for me to control myself. My talent is like yours, insofar as it has any real worth at all. It is the gift of finding words for divine truth.
It's the gift of the gab, nothing more and nothing less. What is your knack of fine talking to do with the truth?
What do you mean?
Oh, it's an old story, Morell. You'll find it in the Bible. You know, I imagine King David, in his fits of enthusiasm when he was dancing before the people, was very like you. But his wife despised him in her heart.
Leave my house. Leave my house!
Let me alone. Don't
you
touch me.
Hear me? Leave my house, or I'll...
Stop. If you strike me, I'll kill myself. I won't bear it. Now, let me go. Take your hand away from my throat.
You little sniveling, cowardly what? Go before you frighten yourself into a fit.
I'm not afraid of you. It is you who are afraid of me.
Well, now it looks like it, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Listen, you think because I shrink from being brutally handled, because I can do nothing but cry with rage when I'm met with violence, because I can't lift a heavy trunk down from the top of a cab like you, all that makes you think that I'm afraid of you, but you're wrong. I'm no coward. I'm not afraid of a clergyman's ideas. I'll fight your ideas. I'll rescue her from her slavery to them. I'll pit my own ideas against them. Morell, you are driving me out of the house because you daren't let her choose between your ideas and mine. You are afraid to let me see her again.
Afraid, am I? So I'm afraid.
No, don't touch me. Let me alone. I'm going.
No, Marchbanks, you'd better stay a bit. Candida will wonder why you left without a word.
And you shall tell her. Morell, if you give any explanation but the true one, you are a liar and a coward. Tell her what I said, and how you were strong and manly and shook me as a terrier shakes a rat, and how I shrank and was terrified, and how you called me a sniveling little whelp and put me out of the house.
Why do you want her to know
that? Because she will understand me and know that I understand her. If you keep back one word of it from her, if you are not ready to lay the truth at her feet as I am, then you will know to the end of your days that she really belongs to me and not to you. Goodbye.
Why, Jean, are you going?
Oh, Mrs. Morell, I was just
about... Hear me. Just look at you. Going out into the street in that state. You are a poet, certainly. Look at him, James. Look at his collar. Look at his tie. Look at his hair. Jean, one would think somebody had been throttling you.
What? Oh.
Here, stand still. Let me button your collar. There. Now you look so nice that I think you'd better stay for lunch, though I told you you mustn't. It'll be ready in half an hour.
Oh, I want to stay, of course. Unless the reverend gentleman, your husband, has anything to advance to the contrary.
Well, James, shall he stay if he promises to be a good boy and to help me to set the table?
Well, Mr. Morell, do I stay?
Oh, yes, certainly.
Come, Mrs. Morell, if you will be so good as to take my arm, we will go inside and set the table.
Very well, Eugene.
Do you know something, Mrs. Morell? Today I am the happiest of men.
So was I, an hour ago.
Well, James, lunch will be ready in a moment.
Thank you, my dear.
Now put down those letters, or whatever you're writing, and come here. I want to look at you.
Yes, dear.
My boy is not looking well. Has he been overworking?
Well, nothing more than usual.
He looks very pale and gray, and wrinkled and old. Here, come along, and sit down beside me, and talk to me.
But my work...
Yes, I must be talked to sometimes. Now sit right down here. There. You're beginning to look better already. Ah, James, why don't you give up all this tiresome overworking? Going out every night talking and lecturing. Of course, what you say is all very true and right, but it does no good. They don't mind what you say one little bit. Of course, they agree with you. But what's the good of people agreeing with you if they go and do just the opposite of what you tell them the moment your back is turned? Don't look at our congregation at St. Dominic's. Why do you suppose they come to hear you talk about Christianity every Sunday?
I've often wondered.
Because they're so full of business making for 6 days in the week that they want to forget all about it and get a rest on the seventh. So they can go back fresh and make money harder than ever. You positively help them instead of hindering them.
Oh, you know very well, Candida, that I often blow them up soundly for that. But there must be some good in the fact that they prefer St. Dominic's to worse places on Sunday.
Well, the worst places aren't open. And even if they were, they daren't be seen going to them. Besides, James, dear, you preach so splendidly that it's as good as a play to them. Well, why do you suppose the women are so enthusiastic?
Candida.
Oh, I know. They all have Prossy's complaint.
Prossy's complaint?
Yes.
What do you mean, Candida?
Prossy and all the other secretaries you've ever had. Now, why do you suppose Prossy condescends to wash up things and peel the potatoes and abase herself in all manner of ways for 6 shillings a week less than she used to get at the city office? She's in love with you, James. That's the reason.
Candida.
Yes, they're all in love with you. And you're in love with preaching because you do it so beautifully. You think it's all enthusiasm for the kingdom of heaven on earth, and so do they. You dear silly.
Candida, what dreadful, what soul-destroying cynicism. Are you jesting or...
can it be? Are you jealous?
Yes. Yes, I feel a little jealous sometimes.
Why, of Prossy?
Oh, no, no. Not jealous of anybody. Jealous for somebody else who's not loved as he ought to be.
Me?
You? Oh, you're spoiled with love and worship. You get far more than is good for you. No. No, I mean Eugene.
Eugene?
It seems unfair that all the love should go to you and none to him. Though he needs it so much more than you do.
Oh.
What's the matter, dear? Am I worrying you?
Oh, not at all. But you know that I have perfect confidence in you, Candida.
You vain thing. Are you so sure of your irresistible attraction?
Candida, you're shocking me. I never thought of my attractions. I thought of your goodness, your purity. That's what I confide in.
Oh, what a nasty, uncomfortable thing to say to me. You are a clergyman, James. A thorough clergyman.
So Eugene says.
But Eugene's always right. He's a wonderful boy. I've grown fond of him all the time I was away. You know, James, though he's not the least suspicion of it himself, he's ready to fall madly in love with me.
Oh, he has no suspicion of it himself, hasn't he?
Not a bit. Someday he'll know. When he's grown up in experience like you. And he'll know that I must have known. I wonder what he'll think of me then.
No evil, Candida. I hope and trust no evil.
That will depend.
Depend?
Yes, it'll depend on just...
Excuse me.
Yes, Prossy, what is it?
Lunch is ready, Mrs. Morell.
Oh, thank you, Prossy. Come, James.
But, Candida, you were saying...
After lunch, dear. It's impolite to keep our guest waiting. You haven't forgotten we have a guest, have you?
No, my dear, I haven't forgotten.
You are listening to Candida, produced by the Theatre Guild on the Air, presented by the United States Steel Corporation. And here, speaking for United States Steel, is George Hicks.
Good evening. Among the many blessed democratic freedoms we Americans enjoy, but often take for granted, is our freedom to own and operate businesses. Millions of us take advantage of this freedom by sharing in the ownership or operation of small businesses. Other millions of us share in the ownership of large businesses by becoming stockholders. Tomorrow morning, many of the stockholding owners of U.S. Steel will get together with officers of the company and members of the board of directors for the company's 50th annual stockholders meeting. The meeting will take place in Hoboken, New Jersey, since U.S. Steel was incorporated in New Jersey back in 1901. Directors will be elected and such other business as comes before the meeting will be transacted. Of course, there'll be a big crowd, for all stockholders are welcome, but only a small fraction of the corporation's 260,000 stockholding owners will be there in person. That's because U.S. Steel stockholders are scattered all over the country. Indeed, there's at least one U.S. Steel stockholder in practically every county and town in this nation. To bring all 260,000 of them together would require not only a tremendous amount of traveling, but also a meeting place about 18 times the size of New York City's famous Madison Square Garden. Out of all these 260,000 stockholding owners, no single individual man or woman owns as much as 0.3% of United States Steel preferred or common stock. All of them, however, have invested their savings in United States Steel because they have faith in the future of the corporation and of the nation which it serves. For half a century, stockholders' invested savings have provided the tools and equipment for U.S. Steel's employees to use, the tools which create products and services sold to the public. The proceeds from these sales pay the employees for their work, purchase supplies and services, pay taxes and other costs, while the stockholding owners are paid for the use of their savings in dividends. Practically all corporations in this country operate in that way. It's our democratic American way of doing business. It's the way that has helped us build the highest living standard any nation has ever known in the history of the world. At tomorrow's 50th annual stockholders meeting, the management of United States Steel will report on its responsibilities to customers, to employees, to stockholding owners, and to the nation. Profitable operation through sound management means important benefits for all groups in the industrial family that has served the nation for 50 years, United States Steel.
You are listening to the Theater Guild on the Air, presented by the United States Steel Corporation. We pause now for station identification.
On the second act of Candida, starring Catherine Cornell as Candida. Featured are Wesley Addy as the Reverend James Morell, Alfred Ryder as Eugene, Brenda Forbes as Prossy, Malcolm Keane as Mr. Burgess, and Oliver Cliff as Lexi. It's late afternoon of the same day. In Morell's study, Miss Prossy is busily engaged at her typewriter. But standing beside her, watching her fingers as they ripple over the keys, is Eugene Marchbank.
Miss Garnett.
Hmm?
This typewriter, I suppose it could be made to write love letters, eh?
How do I know? Why do you ask me?
Oh, I beg your pardon. I hope I haven't offended you. Perhaps I shouldn't have alluded to your love affairs.
Mr. Marchbank, I haven't any love affairs. How dare you say such a thing?
Really? Oh, then you are shy like me, isn't that so?
Certainly I'm not shy. What do you mean?
You must be. That is the reason there are so few love affairs in the world. We all go about longing for love, but we dare not utter our longing. We are too shy. Oh, Miss Garnett, what would you not give to be without fear, without shame?
Look here, Mr. Marchbanks. If you don't hold your tongue, I'll leave the room. I really will. It's not proper.
Yes, that's what it always comes to. We hold our tongues. Does that stop the cry of your hearts? For it does cry, doesn't it?
Mr. Marchbanks, it's no business of yours whether my heart cries or not. Anyhow, it's not for any particular person.
I know. You feel that you could love anybody that offers.
Anybody that... No, I do not. What do you take me for?
It's no use. You won't make me real answers. Only those things that everybody says.
Oh, well, if you want original conversation, you better talk to yourself. Wait till Mr. Morell comes. He'll talk to you.
Morell?
Oh, you needn't make wry faces over him. He can talk better than you. He'd talk your little head off.
Ah, now I understand.
What do you understand?
Your secret. Tell me, is it really and truly possible for a woman to love him?
Well...
No, answer me. I want to know. I must know.
I simply don't know what you're talking about. I don't understand you.
You do understand, and you know. Is it possible for a woman to love him?
Yes, Mr. Marchbank. It is very possible indeed. Now, if you'll excuse me.
Prossy, it's almost 6:30.
Already? Oh, then I better be giving Mrs. Morell a hand with the dinner things.
Thank you, Prossy. You'll find her in the scullery filling the lamps.
Oh, very well.
Well, Marchbanks.
Morell, what's that you said about Mrs. Morell?
I believe my exact words were, she is in the scullery filling the lamps. Why?
But that will soil her hands. I can't bear that, Morell. Don't you keep a servant to do that sort of thing?
Oh, yes. But she isn't a slave. Everyone has to lend a hand, even Prossy.
Well, you think every woman is as coarse-grained as Miss Garnett?
Tell me something, Marchbanks.
Yes?
How many servants does your father keep?
Oh, I don't know.
So many that you don't know. Anyhow, when there's anything coarse-grained to be done, you ring the bell and throw it on to someone else, eh? That's one of the great facts of your existence, isn't it?
No, don't torture me. The one great fact now is that your wife's beautiful fingers are dabbling in paraffin oil, and that you are sitting here comfortably preaching about it. Everlasting preaching, preaching. Words, words, words.
Dean, if you stay with us, I think I'll hand over the lamps to you.
I will stay on condition that you hand over all the rough work to me.
Well, that's very gallant, but I think I'll wait to see how you do it first. James, you've not been looking after the house properly.
What have I done, or not done, my love?
My own particular pet scrubbing brush has been used for stove blacking.
Oh, no.
What's the matter, Eugene? Are you ill?
No, not ill, only...
What is it? Oh, the scrubbing brush. Well, never mind. Would you like to present me with a nice new one? With an ivory back inlaid with mother of pearl?
No, not a scrubbing brush, but a boat. A tiny shallop to sail away in, far from the world. Where the marble floors are washed for the rain and dried by the sun. Where the south wind dusts the beautiful green and purple carpet. Or a chariot to carry us up into the sky where the lamps are stars and don't need to be filled with paraffin oil every day.
And where there is nothing to do but to be idle, selfish, and useless.
Ah, James, how could you spoil it all?
Yes, to be idle, selfish, and useless. That is to be beautiful and free and happy. Hasn't every man desired that with all his soul for the woman he loves? That's my ideal. What's yours, Morell? Sermons and scrubbing brushes? With you to preach and your wife to scrub?
He cleans the boots, Eugene. You will have to clean them tomorrow for saying that about him. Yes, Prossy, what is it?
A telegram for Mr. Morell.
Oh, for me? Oh, thank you, Prossy.
Reply paid. The boy's waiting.
Who is it from, James?
Guild of St. Matthew. Prossy, tell the boy I'll have the reply for him in a moment. Excuse me, my dear, while I attend to this.
Oh, and Mrs. Morell, the onions for dinner have arrived.
Oh, thank you, Prossy.
Onions?
Yes, onions. Not even Spanish ones. Nasty little red onion. You shall help me slice them.
Certainly, but I insist on doing it all myself. You shall not...
Very well. You shall do it all by yourself if you like.
And while I'm doing it, you shall sit on a little stool beside the window and look out at the sunset.
I shall do no such thing. I shall come back in here and talk to James. I haven't really seen the poor darling since I came home.
But
you'd better not pay too much attention to the sunset, either. You'll cut your fingers on the paring knife. Come along. Well, James, all through with your telegram?
Yes, dear. Where is Marchbank?
In the scullery, slicing the onions.
Candida, before lunch, you were
James,
saying...
James, what does it matter what I was saying?
It matters a great deal, my dear. Perhaps more than you think.
Why, James?
My dear, you were saying that when Eugene had become grown up, he would realize you must have known all the time that he was in love with you.
Yes.
And when I said that I hoped and trusted he will think no evil of you then, you said that would depend, did
yes.
you not?
Yes, James.
On what would it depend, my dear?
Well, it'll depend on how he comes to learn what love really is. I mean, on the sort of woman who will teach it to him. If he learns it from a good woman, then it'll be all right. He'll forgive me.
Forgive?
But suppose he learns it from a bad woman, as so many men do. Especially poetic men, who imagine all women are angels. Will he forgive me then, do you think?
Forgive you for what?
For not teaching him myself. For abandoning him to the bad women for the sake of my goodness. My purity, as you call it. Ah, James, how little you understand me. To talk of your confidence in my goodness and purity. I'd give them both to poor Eugene as willingly as I'd give my shawl to a beggar dying of cold. If there were nothing else to restrain me. Put your trust in my love for you, James, for if that went, I'd care very little for your sermons. Mere phrases that you cheat yourself and others with every day.
His words.
Whose words?
Eugene.
Well, he's always right. He understands you. He understands me. He understands Prossy. And you, James, you understand nothing. Now come. Let me kiss you. There.
How can you bear to do that when... Oh, Candida, I had rather you had plunged a grappling iron into my heart than given me that kiss.
My dear, what's the matter?
Don't touch me.
But James, what is it?
Hello.
What's you, Eugene?
Is anything the matter?
Nothing but this, Ken Marchbanks, that either you were right this morning or Candida is mad.
Oh, you're only shocked. Is that all it is?
Is that all?
Eugene... This comes of James is teaching me to think for myself and never to hold back out of fear of what anyone else might think of me. It works very well so long as I think the same thing as he does. But now, just because I've thought something different. Look at him. Just look.
Oh, here you all are in here.
Good evening, Lexi. You know Eugene, don't you?
Huh? Oh, yes. How do you do, Marshbank? Miss Morell, I've just come from the Guild of St. Matthew. They're in the greatest consternation about your telegram. There's nothing wrong, is there?
What did you telegraph about James?
Oh, nothing very important.
He was to have spoken for them tonight, Mrs. Morell. They've taken a large hall and spent a lot of money on posters. Mr. Morell's telegram said he couldn't come.
That is correct. I can't go.
Is it why, James?
Because I don't choose. These people forget that I'm a man. They think that I'm a talking machine to be turned on for their pleasure every evening of my life. May I not have one evening at home with my wife and my friend?
But, Mr.
Now, James, you know you'll have an attack of bad conscience tomorrow, and I shall have to suffer for that.
Mr. Morell, I realize, of course, that they make the most unreasonable demands on you.
Now, do go, James. We'll all go and sit on the platform and be great people, won't we, Eugene?
Oh, please, not on the platform.
Oh, don't be silly. They'll be too busy looking at James to notice you.
Prossy's complaint, Candida,
yes.
Eh?
Yes.
Very well. Miss Garnet.
Yes, Mr. Morell, coming. Yes, sir.
Telegraph to the Guild of St. Matthew's at once. Tell them that I am coming.
Don't they expect you?
Do as I tell you.
Yes, Mr. Morell, I'll do it at once.
I shall want you to take some notes at the meeting, Miss Garnet, if you have no other engagement.
No, sir. I mean, yes, Mr. Morell.
Very good. Lexi, you're coming, I suppose.
Certainly, Mr. Morell.
Yes, we're all coming, James.
No, Candida, you are not coming. And Eugene is not coming. You will stay here and entertain him to celebrate your return home.
What? What's that, Morell?
But James...
Oh, don't concern yourself, my dear.
But perhaps Eugene would like to come.
I should be afraid to let myself go before Eugene. He is so critical of sermons. Also, he knows that I am afraid of him. He told me as much this morning. Well, I shall show him how much afraid of him I am by leaving him here in your custody, Candida.
That's brave, Morell. That's beautiful.
But it doesn't matter, James. I can't understand.
Oh, my dear, I thought it was I who couldn't understand.
But James, are you sure?
Kiss me goodbye, my dear. Goodbye, Marchbanks.
Yet still steadfast, still unchangeable, pillowed upon my fair love's ripening breast, to feel forever its soft fall and swell, awake forever in a sweet unrest. You know, every poet that ever lived has put that thought into a sonnet. Mrs. Morell, haven't you been listening? Mrs. Morell?
Yes?
Haven't you been listening?
Oh, yes, go on, Eugene. I'm longing to hear what happens to the angel.
I finished the poem about the angel quarter of an hour ago. I've read you several things since.
I'm so sorry. I think this fire poker must have fascinated me.
Made me horribly uneasy. It looked as if it were a weapon. Shall I read some more?
No. Come over here and sit on the hearthrug.
At your feet?
Yes, and talk moonshine as you usually do. I want to be amused. There. Isn't that better?
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Well, what are you thinking about?
Well, only that I've been so miserable all evening because I was doing right. Now I'm doing wrong and I'm happy.
Yes, I'm sure you feel a great grown-up, wicked deceiver. Quite proud of yourself, aren't you?
Take care. I'm ever so much older than you, if you only knew. May I say some wicked things to you?
No. But you may say anything you really and truly feel. Anything at all. So long as it's your real self that speaks, and not a mere attitude. Well, Eugene?
No, I can't say anything. All the words I know belong to some attitude or other. All except one.
And what one is that?
Candida. Candida, 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 Candida.
What have you to say to Candida?
Nothing. Only to repeat your name 1,000 times.
I hope I don't disturb
you. Oh, James, how you startled me. Did the meeting go well? Did you speak well?
I have never spoken better in my life.
Let us say straight. Where Where are the others?
I believe your father took them all to supper somewhere.
Papa? James, do you mean to say he was at your meeting?
Oh, yes, he turned up for some good reason of his own, I'm sure. I've no idea of what it is.
Well, I better tell cook she may go to bed. I'll be back in a moment, then you can tell me all about everything.
Well, Marchbanks?
Well, Morell?
Have you anything to tell me?
Only that I've been making a fool of myself here in private, whilst you have been making a fool of yourself in public.
Hardly in the same way, I think.
The very, very same way. I have been playing the good man, just like you. When you began your heroics about leaving me here with Candida...
Candida?
Oh, yes, I've got that far. Heroics are infectious, Morell. I caught the disease from you. I swore not to say a word in your absence that I would not have said a month ago in your presence.
Did you keep your oath?
Yes, I was ass enough to keep it. Until about 10 minutes ago. Up to that moment, I went on desperately reading to her to stave off conversation. I was standing outside the gate of heaven and refusing to go in. And then...
Then?
Then she couldn't bear being read to any longer.
And you approached the gate of heaven at last?
Yes.
Well? Speak, man, have you no feeling for me?
Then she became an angel. And there was a flaming sword that turned every way so that I couldn't go on, for I saw that the gate was really the gate of hell.
She repulsed you.
No, you fool.
What?
She offered me all I chose to ask for. A shawl, her wings, the wreath of stars on her head.
Out with the truth, man. My wife is my wife. I want no more of your poetic fripperies. Out with the truth or I'll shake it out of you.
Go on, catch me by the shirt collar, Morell. She will arrange it for me afterwards, as she did this morning. I shall feel her touch me.
Marchbanks, if you have a spark of human feeling left in you, will you tell me what has happened during my absence?
What happened? Well, in plain prose, I loved her so exquisitely that I wanted nothing more than the happiness of being in such love. And before I had time to come down from the highest summits, you came in.
So it's still unsettled. Still the misery of doubt.
Misery? I am the happiest of men. Oh, Morell, let us both give her up. Why should she have to choose between a wretched little nervous disease like me and a pig-headed parson like you?
Marchbanks, if she is mad enough to leave me for you, who will protect her? Who will work for her?
She does not ask those silly questions. It is she who wants somebody to protect, to work for. Some grown-up man who has become as a little child again. Oh, you fool, you fool, you triple fool. I am the man, Morell. I am the man. You don't understand what a woman is. Send for her, Morell. Send for her and let her choose between us.
Jean, what on earth are you at? Well... Have you been annoying James? I won't have it, you hear, Eugene.
Oh, I'm very sorry. I won't do it again. Indeed, I won't. I'll let him alone.
You'll let me alone? Why, you...
Shh, James. Let me deal with this. Eugene, I'm very angry with you. I've a great mind to pack you out of the house.
Oh, gently, Candida, gently. I am able to take care of myself.
Yes, dear, of course you are. But I won't have you annoyed and made miserable.
Candida, my dear, this is a matter between two men, and I am the right person to settle it.
Two men? Do you call that a man? Oh, Eugene, you bad boy.
Candida, if I'm to be scolded like this, I must make a boy's excuse. He began it, and he's bigger than I am.
Well, that can't be true, James. You didn't begin it.
No.
Oh.
You began it this morning, Marchbanks. But your other point is true. I certainly am the bigger of the two, and I hope the stronger, Candida. So you'd better leave the matter in my hands.
Yes, dear, but I don't understand about this move. Oh, bother. Now, who can that be?
Candy! Open the door!
We're back, all of us.
Including me.
Goodness, it's Papa and the others. They sound very exuberant, don't they?
Yes. If I weren't positive that both Lexi and Prati are teetotalers, I'd take my oath.
I'll show them into the study. You remain here, dear.
Well, perhaps we'd all better go into the study, my dear. I've never heard Prati giggle before. This may be something serious.
So
you see, Mr. Burgess was kind enough to give us a really splendid supper at the Belgrave.
Yes, Mr. Morell, and we all had champagne. I've never tasted it before. I feel quite giddy.
A champagne supper? Burgess, was it my eloquence that produced all this extravagance?
Eloquence, yes. It kept me awake till the last word.
We had the chairman of the committee dining with us, too.
Oh, now I understand. He has great influence in the letting of contracts, hasn't he, Burgess?
Well, you know how it is, James. Business is business.
Who'll have some lemonade?
No use, Candida. They've all had champagne. Prossy has broken her pledge.
Prossy? You don't mean to say you've been drinking champagne?
Yes, I do. I'm only a beer teetotaler, not a champagne teetotaler. I don't like beer. Well, I guess I'd better be going home. Good night, everybody.
Miss Garnett, had I not better see you home?
Oh, no, thank you. I shan't trust myself with anybody tonight. Good night.
Go and look after her, Lexi.
Oh, but if you should really be... I suppose she began to sing in the street or anything of that sort.
Just so, she may. That's why you'd better see her safely home.
Oh, very well. Good night, Mrs. Morell.
Good night, all.
Well, Mr. Marshbanks, shall I have the pleasure of your company for a bit of the way home?
Yes, I'd better go too.
You sit down, Eugene. You're not going yet. Mr. Marshbanks will stay the night with us, Papa.
Oh. Well, I'll say good night then. So long, James. Good night, Candy.
I'll go with you, Burgess, and help you with your coat.
You stay here, dear. I'll help Papa with this coat, and then I'll come right back.
Morell, it's going to be a terrible scene. Aren't you afraid?
Not in the least.
Oh, I never envied you your courage before. Stand by me, won't you?
Each for himself, Eugene. She must choose between us now.
I've never seen Papa in such a good spirits. He must have had a fat contract from that gentleman of the committee. Well, James?
Yes, Candida?
What was it you and Eugene were quarreling about? Come, tell me.
Well, Candida, I meant to prepare your mind carefully so as to prevent misunderstanding.
Yes, I'm sure you did, dear. But never mind. I shan't misunderstand.
Well,
Well?
Candida, Eugene declares that you are in love with him.
No, never. I did not, Mrs. Morell. It's not true. I said I loved you and that he didn't. I said that I understood you and that he couldn't. And it was not after our being alone here together, you and I, that I spoke. It was not on my word. It was this morning.
This morning?
Yes, that was what was the matter with my collar.
Your collar? Oh, James, did you...
You know, Candida, that I have a temper to struggle with. And he said that you despise me in your heart.
Eugene, did you say that?
No.
Then James has just told me a falsehood. Is that what you mean?
No. It was David's wife. In the Bible. And it wasn't at home. It is when she saw him dancing before all the people.
Dancing before all the people, Candida, and thinking he was moving their hearts by his mission, when they were only suffering from Prossy's complaint.
But James, when I called it that, I didn't...
Oh, please, Eugene was right. As you told me a few hours after, he is always right. He is the poet who sees everything. And I am the poor parson who understands nothing.
Do you mind what is said by a foolish boy? Because I said something like it again in jest.
That foolish boy can speak with the inspiration of a child and the cunning of a serpent. He has claimed that you belong to him and not to me. And rightly or wrongly, I have come to fear that it may be true. I will not go about tortured by doubts and suspicions. I will not live with you and keep a secret from you. I will not suffer the intolerable degradation of jealousy. Candida, we have agreed, he and I, that you shall choose between us now. I await your decision.
So, I'm to choose. I suppose that it's quite settled that I must belong to one or the other.
Quite. You must choose, definitely.
Morell, you don't understand. She means that she belongs to herself.
I mean that in a great deal more, Master Eugene, as you will both see presently. And pray, my lords and masters, what are you to offer for my choice? I'm up for auction, it seems. What do you bid, James?
Candid. I can't speak.
Now, James, dear...
Stop, it's not fair. You mustn't show her that you suffer, Morell. I am on the rack, too, but I'm not crying.
Yes, Marchbanks, you're right. It is not for pity that I am bidding. Candida, my dear, please take your hand from my arm.
I beg your pardon, James. I did not mean to touch you. Well, I'm waiting to hear your bid.
I have nothing to offer you but my strength for your defense, my honesty of purpose for your surety, my ability and industry for your livelihood, and my authority and position for your dignity. That is all it becomes a man to offer a woman.
I see. And you, Eugene? What do you offer?
My weakness, my desolation, my heart's need.
It's a good bid, Eugene. Now I know how to make my choice. I give myself to the weaker of the two.
What? Very well, Candida. I accept your sentence.
Do you understand, Eugene?
Oh, I feel I am lost. He cannot bear the burden.
Do you mean me, Candida?
James, sit down, dear. Eugene, sit over there on the sofa. That's right. Eugene, do you remember what you told me about yourself? How nobody's cared for you since your old nurse died? How those clever and fashionable sisters and successful brothers of yours were your father's and mother's pets? How you've had to live without comfort or welcome or refuge, always lonely, and nearly always disliked and misunderstood, poor boy.
I had my books. I had nature. And at last I met you.
Never mind that just at present. Now I want you to look at this other boy here. My boy. Spoiled from his cradle. We go once a fortnight to see his parents. You should come with us, Eugene, and see the pictures of the hero of that household. James is a baby, the most wonderful of all babies. James holding his first school prize. James the captain of his 11. James under all sorts of glorious circumstances. You know how strong he is, how clever he is, how happy. Ask James's mother and his three sisters what it cost to save James the trouble of doing anything but be strong and clever and happy. Ask me what it costs to be James's mother and his three sisters, and wife and mother to his children all in one. Ask Percy and cook how troublesome the house can be, even when we've no visitors to help us slice the onion. Ask the tradesmen who want to worry James and spoil his beautiful sermons who it is that puts them off. When there's money to give, he gives it. When there's money to refuse, I refuse it. I build a castle of comfort, indulgence, and love for him, and stand sentinel always to keep little vulgar cares out. I make him master here, though he doesn't know it. And when he thought I might go away with him, his only anxiety was what should become of me. And to tempt me to stay, he offered me his strength for my defense, his industry for my livelihood, his position. Oh, James, darling, I'm mixing up your beautiful sentences and spoiling them. Am I not?
It's all true, darling, every word. What I am, you have made me with the labor of your hands and the love of your heart. You are my wife, my mother, my sisters. You are the sum of all loving care to me.
I know, darling. Eugene, am I your mother and sisters to you?
No, never. Out then into the night with me.
Wait. You're not going like that, Eugene.
I know the hour when it strikes. I am impatient to do what must be done.
Candida, don't let him do anything rash.
There is no fear. He has learned to live without happiness.
I no longer desire happiness. Life is nobler than that. Parson James, I give you my happiness with both hands. I love you because you have filled the heart of the woman I love. Goodbye.
Wait. One last word. How old are you, Eugene?
As old as the world now. This morning I was 18.
18. Will you, for my sake, make a little poem of the two sentences I'm going to say to you?
But...
Will you promise to repeat them to yourself? Whenever you think of me?
Say the sentences.
When I am 30, she will be 45. When I am 60, she will be 75.
In 100 years, we shall be the same age. But I have a better secret than that in my heart. Let me go now. The night outside grows impatient. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye, Eugene. Now, James, come. Take me in your arms.
The curtain has fallen on the Theater Guild on the Air production of Canada, sponsored by the United States Steel Corporation. We express our thanks to our star, Catherine Cornell, as Canada, and to our featured players, Wesley Addy as the Reverend James Morrell, Alfred Ryder as Eugene, Brenda Forbes as Prossy, Malcolm Keane as Mr. Burgess, and Oliver Cliff as Lexi. And now here is Roger Pryor with a word about next week's play.
Next week, we are proud to present a special broadcast in celebration of United States Steel's 50th anniversary. With Rosalind Russell and Melvin Douglas as our stars, the Theater Guild on the Air will come to you direct from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where we will play before an audience of 4,000. You'll hear Rosalind Russell and Melvin Douglas in Craig's Wife by George Kelly, the powerful drama of modern marriage that won the Pulitzer Award. We hope you'll be sure to tune in next Sunday to this golden anniversary program. In weeks to come, the Theater Guild on the Air will bring you one of the most famous dramas of the modern theater, Ethan Frome, from the novel by Edith Wharton. Now listen also to our forthcoming broadcast of an all-star cast in Ring Lardner's hilarious comedy, Elmer the Great. And now, a word from George Hicks.
Attention, fellow Americans. Let's you and I face a few neglected facts about air attacks. Fact one. Such attacks are possible. Fact two, modern aggressors strike without warning. Fact three, atomic air attacks can be survived by you and your loved ones if you and they are prepared, if you and they know what to do when under attack and in the moments that follow an attack. So please make sure you have a copy of the official Civil Defense Air Raid Instructions. Then see to it that you and every member of your family learn those instructions by heart. Knowing them can mean the difference between living and dying. If for any reason the instruction sheet is not available from your local civil defense headquarters, you can get it by writing Superintendent of Documents, Washington, D.C., and enclosing 5 cents in coin or stamps. Don't put this off. Do something about it tonight, sure.
Remember, next week on the United States Steel Hour, Craig's Wife, starring Rosalind Russell and Melvin Douglas. And remember, too, that the trademark of United States Steel, USS on any steel product, is your guide to quality steel. The Theater Guild on the Air is under the supervision of Lawrence Langner and Teresa Helburn, with Armina Marshall, executive producer. S. Mark Smith is editor. Music was composed and conducted by Harold Levy. Your announcer is Norman Brokenshire. The United States Steel Corporation hopes that you'll be with us next Sunday at the same time.
Railroad Hour plays High Button Shoes tomorrow. Hear it on NBC.